It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The premier baseball show in Chicago, Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Here's a high fly ball, deep left center. It's got a chance. Get out the tape measure. Long gone for Seiya Suzuki. Into the upper deck and left. He got all of that one. Similar in distance, I would think, to his grand slam last Saturday night against the same pitcher, Hunter Green.
Seiya Suzuki with a homer the other night. He and Morel both homered in the 8-4 loss. Which Cubs loss was your favorite? Oh, boy, it's grim. The fourth place Chicago Cubs, now passed by the Reds, in addition to the Cardinals and, of course, the Milwaukee Brewers. Lot of work to do. Lot of work to do for the 2024 Chicago Cubs. It has been a tough season so far for the vision of Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins. It has been a tough year so far. I thought Patrick Mooney said it very well today in The Athletic, that Nico Hoerner and Seiya Suzuki, who of course are both injured, both part of a short Cubs bench, just two people on the bench yesterday as they lost that one. Hoyer's front office, he said that Hoerner and Suzuki should be in the prime of their careers. Jed Hoyer's front office factored that into a methodical rebuild that prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle. And I think that's very well said. And there is good reasoning as to why they prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle, trying to build it with a bunch of pretty good players. But when a bunch of those pretty good players do not have pretty good years, then you're in a lot of trouble. And there is no superstar to put up, what, a 6-war season, a 7-war season? There's nobody to do that. There is nobody on this team to do that.
For context, 2016 had 4 6-war players.
Wow.
Six-war players.
That's a great pull, Sean. That's a great pull by Sean Sears. 4 different 6-war players. Yeah, that'll help. There's nobody on this roster who's looking like it. I mean, Dansby Swanson has had 5 WAR wins above replacement seasons before, but he's obviously nowhere near that right now. Seiya Suzuki is the guy they thought was going to be a superstar. He's the guy they needed to be a superstar. It's a investment of more than $100 million when you factor in the posting fee. He has not delivered as such. The mix is not working because the prospects that they could be bringing up aggressively are corner outfield types. I mean, it'd be great to have Alexander Canario in this lineup, but he's got nowhere to play. It'd be intriguing to bring up Owen Casey in this lineup, but he doesn't really have anywhere to play. They've paid Hap and paid Seiya at corner outfield spots, which is where they have the prospects who are most ready-made. Then they make the trade for Michael Busch because they think he's better than Matt Mervis. And is he? He had a great 6-game stretch in April, and it's gone way down, and then it's perhaps come back up a little bit, but I don't know. And I don't want to hammer Seiya too much, but the problem is he's the one who they expected to be a superstar. He's the one that they thought was going to be that dude. And he clearly gets in his head too much. And it's a difficult thing to scout. And maybe it didn't happen in Japan and it's happening at this level. But we've seen it in the field, as we've talked about, frankly, on the 2 previous Sundays. And it happens at the plate. which we talked about a lot last year, that he got caught in between. And still sometimes he does get caught in between. Dustin Kelly, the hitting coach, in that same Patrick Mooney article today. With Seiya, it's just like, hey, your swing is so good that when the ball's in the middle of the zone and you're on time, great things are going to happen. We just have to try to limit some of those thoughts about getting outside that really basic, simple approach. Look, hitting is hard. But when he struggles, he's got one swing, that's another way. He's got another swing, that's another way. And he gets caught in which swing to have. You see a lot of bad, weird swings sometimes from Seiya. A lot of swords, as Pitching Ninja says it. He's too good for that. And his own hitting coaches know it. So look, Seiya's OPS is back up near 800. So he's above league average. But he's expected to be that 900 OPS superstar that he was from August until the end of the year. And he hit the spring running, but has not been that guy with the oblique injury and now hurt again. And you hope it's not related to the oblique again. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to you, Eno Saris, in about 20 minutes or so on Hit and Run on the Score. This is John in Logan Square. John, you're on Hit and Run. Good morning to you on a Sunday.
Hey, Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day. I've decided it's going to be a great day. I'm going to live in baseball optimism, but then I start talking and it gets in trouble. Can you help me?
I know.
Can you help
me? I was at the Red Stars game yesterday. I didn't check the Cubs score because I already knew that they lost.
Oh, man. That's rough.
So a couple of things. The 2016 team, you mentioned WAR. I think this team can have six players above 4 or 5 WAR if you don't factor in their defense. I think that's what's killing their WAR this year is when you measure the 2016 Cubs, their defensive WAR added probably a game or two to that. One. Two, if you think about last year, we lost the season in about 10 games, 2 weeks' time. So that leads me to some optimism that we can make up that time in the same amount of weeks or days or games, right? I think a 2-3 week stretch is all it takes to get back in it. Three, I have a trade. If you were the White Sox, would you trade Robert for PCA and a Wesneski and or a Brown or an Assad or a Horton? What do you think?
That's an interesting deal. I don't think I've heard that yet. That's the kind of trade proposal, at least a framework that ought to light up the phone lines here at 670 The Score. I find myself in the position of hoping that no one has mentioned it before and that no one mentions it tomorrow. David Haw, if you're listening, don't talk about that tomorrow. Lawrence Bernsey, if you're listening, don't talk about that tomorrow. I know Danny's not listening, so that's good. I got that covered. I can bring it to the pre-show meeting. The Robert trade with PCA as a centerpiece. Don't give up Brown. See if you can convince him on Wesneski. PCA and Wesneski for Luis Robert. I know, Cub fans, you love your PCA.
This would break me.
Would break you as a PCA fan, as a Cub fan? I know it's your guy.
I'm a little bit of both. We'll talk about Saez, my other guy, too. This team, there's not too many guys that are fun to cheer for.
Right, I know, but you've put Robert in center field right now on this team?
He'd look pretty damn good, man. He would get hurt, probably.
Of course he would. He's going to get hurt 4 times in the next year and a half.
63 games, man. Oh, boy. Oh. Think of him pulling balls at right field.
We saw it the other night. Field. That home run that they said was, what, 448? Hogwash. But that is
the windows behind Wrigley were concerned when he hit that. I'll tell you.
Yeah. Oh my God. Absolute blast. Interesting. It's a good call there, John, because it would hurt to give up PCA.
It usually tells you it's a good trade, though, right?
Absolutely. If it would hurt a little bit and it's confounding a little bit, here's what we know. We know that Jed Hoyer and Chris Getz could make that deal either at the pickup line at school, or perhaps the Whole Foods, or in each other's backyard. Or via text today, after hearing the segment. It seems some people are listening to the show. Folks, just about 4 minutes after we talked about John Schriffen's homage to Hawk Harrelson, which I thought was well executed, and apparently he got clearance from Hawk to do it, but I wondered why it happened on sort of a random Paul DeJong home run when you're already up 5-1, and that makes it 6-1. Just a few minutes after we were talking about it, wondering why it happened, John Schriffen tweeted that it was his homage to Hawk on the anniversary of Hawk Harrelson night. Was that last year was Hawk night or the 2-year anniversary? I don't know.
I tried to Google this. I have not been able to find much.
Yeah. I don't know many Sox fans who are like, boy, calendars, come around once again to that very special day, the anniversary of Hawk Harrelson night. But there you go. So that's why I did it. All right. Whatever gets you going. Thought it was indeed well executed. I got no problem with it. This is Perry in Tennessee on 670 The Score. Good morning, Perry. Welcome to the show.
Matt, good morning. Hey, I want to talk about the coach training for Robert as well. But here's the thing. The point I want to make is right now with an inexperienced Chris Getz, I don't know that you are only going to get PCA and another piece. You might need a little more than that to get Louis Roberts. But the important fact with the Cubs is what you have to do is first, Suzuki's got to be, when he's good, he's great. But he can't be as bad as he is. That as bad as he is, has to be average. But with the trades, they need to get two pieces, I feel. They got to be guys like a Louis Robert that are in their early prime. You don't want to spend money on guys 30, 32, 33 that won't be here with the core. So I like the idea that Cubs have so many prospects to give up that you don't know who's going to be good, who's not going to be good. I think the stocks at this point in time are easy to be had. They don't want to pay for a crochet. We both know. I don't like giving up great pitchers. But in 2 years, they're not paying for the guy. They're just not going to do it. So, and Reinsdorf has no intention of making that team great. He's hoping to just light in a bottle and get a bunch of young guys that somehow gel and are competitive. But he is in no way is he paying a big contract for a guy like Robert or for a guy like Crochet.
All right, let's expand it. Let's go. Let's do it. Okay, let's roll. Let's get kooky. Robert and Crochet, Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert, right the hell now to the Cubs. What would it take? Pete Crow Armstrong and Ben Brown, give them a young pitcher. I mean, you're going to have to.
Right.
You're getting Crochet. You're getting Crochet. And make them give you a bullpen arm, you know, because make them give you John Brebbia. Or if you really want Kopech, I don't want Kopech because I don't trust Kopech. I'm probably not going to do that. But if you're going to give them, because give them James Triantos. You know, and then give them either, oh, it hurts to say Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, but you've got corner outfielders locked and loaded and getting paid in Happ and Saya. So Canario, I mean, you'll offer them Canario and Brennan Davis.
I was going to say Brennan Davis.
Of course.
The other guy, right?
Kevin Alcantara. Kevin Alcantara. So you're going to get Robert for center field when you've got Bellinger under contract for center field. But
I mean, the White Sox need outfielders, right? We know that.
Yeah, they do. So you'll give them a couple outfielders. Give them Alcantara and Brennan Davis. All right, how's this for a trade? Alcantara, Brennan Davis, Ben Brown, and PCA. I know it hurts.
That's a good trade.
But it's Luis Robert and Garrett Crochet.
It almost feels light, right?
It is light.
Yeah.
It is light. You'll have to give him another. Give him a 5-for-2.
Michael Arias, maybe throw him another.
No. You'll need Arias for the bullpen right now this year.
We're not getting rid of him.
No. Especially if you're trading Ben Brown. You're going to need
true.
Him.
That's true.
And because you put Wicks in the rotation, but you're going to need a piece. All right. We're just spitballing this on the fly, okay? But these are exciting and desperate times. Whew. That's a lot, man. Triantos, Brennan Davis, Kevin Alcantara, Ben Brown, and PCA? Ah! That's too much.
Do the Cubs get better is the question.
Of course they do.
I mean, they get better with Crochet, right?
They get an ace. They get a flat-out ace to go with Steele and Shota all of a sudden. Yeah, I mean, you're probably going to... You'll DFA Hendricks once he hits the service time. Sad to say. And you'll bring up Michael Arias in your bullpen with no Ben Brown. And you'll do things like that. All right, you want to tweak it a little bit? Goodness. For those who missed the first hour of the show, I'm on a yes, I would trade Luis Robert if I were the White Sox. No, I would not trade Garrett Crochet if I were the White Sox. But suddenly, in this segment, I became the Cubs. And that's when things got interesting. We take you now live to the backyard in Winnetka, where Chris Getz and Jed Hoyer have a cigar and a bourbon by the fire pit this evening and strike a deal that blows the minds of multiple baseball fanatics in our unique two-team town. One of them could be Stan from Bellwood. Hello, Stan. Welcome in.
Hey, Steve. I'm enjoying this. Your callers are giving me a lot to chew on here.
Uh-huh.
I do have some, I want to contribute a little bit, circling back to that possible Crochet and Robert trade. But just to piggyback on what you were talking about prior to that, you will be interested to know, Speaks, that I am done with trying to figure out who your team of the moment is from week to week. because I'm glad I'm not actually betting money on this, because there was no doubt in my mind that Cincinnati was your team of the moment for this week. I mean, they started out the week in last place.
Yeah.
They've leapfrogged three teams.
Uh-huh.
They've won seven in a row and 8 out of 10.
Yeah, that's true.
So they've actually made a bigger impact on the standings than Kansas. I mean, Kansas City's been good, but they're running in place. I mean, they're not gaining any ground on the team that's ahead of them. I was dead, absolutely dead certain that it was going to be Cincinnati.
Okay.
So I'm just going to wait until you disclose who it is going forward. I'm not even going to.
I don't know. First of all, you're the best team of the moment critic that I've ever had, Stan. I mean,
I'm not a critic. I just
Yeah.
Good at following your logic.
Oh, no, I understand. And, you know, but it's, I think we're going to have to throw it open now. Now that we've done as many teams as we have, I needed to get the Royals in. I hadn't done them yet, Stan. So it's sort of like the Royals winning this week's team of the moment is kind of like Carl Malone eventually getting an MVP after they were tired of voting for Jordan. Yeah.
I got you. Okay, back to the White Sox.
Yes, please.
I don't want to trade either Crochet or Robert. My thinking is you build around those guys. But the 8,000-pound elephant in the room that renders this entire conversation moot is the fact that the White Sox are not going to spend for elite players that would get them out of this rut. So consequently, they don't really have any choice. They've got to trade at least one of those guys, and more likely both. The White Sox are 10 times worse this year than they were last year. And during the offseason, Getz brought in Nicky Lopez and Maldonado and DeYoung, and considered that an upgrade because he hated last year's team, and they're probably going to be the worst team ever this year. That what I think on pace now for like 41 wins because they've won a few games over the last couple of days, but they don't have any choice.
Yeah.
That's the only other option that's open to them if they're serious about getting better. So,
I think it is. I think it is. And maybe it's always been in the mind of Chris Getz. And if he does have the freedom to do that, it's seemingly, increasingly likely that that's the way it's going to go. I mean, look, Han dealt Sale and Quintana, and those were very good trades in terms of what they got. No matter how it ended up working out at the tail end of like having to give up on Dylan Cease and trade him away, and Eloy being hurt as much as he was, and Kopech not fully panning out either as starter or reliever, and Moncada being great and then apathetic and then hurt, There was a lot there that made sense in those deals. And the Adam Eaton deal, maybe the best of all of them, right? With Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, it's amazing. And then here we are. It's such a weird time to look around the leaderboard and see Ronaldo Lopez there, Chris Sale there, and all these guys. Giolito in town, Liam Hendricks in town with the Red Sox. There's a ton of strangeness going on with that Sox mix and what was and where they are now. John is in Minnesota and is now on 670 The Score. What's up, John?
Spiggs, I love the thought of the Robert trade, although I don't see Jed in any way. He hasn't shown that, he's going to step out on a limb like that. And I think, you asked who's the Cub that's most underperformed. I think it's Hoyer. I mean, you've got a guy that's the only major market GM in this division, and he's gotten pantsed by the Brewers. I think watching the Reds here the last couple series, their roster's better. And I think especially, that thing that hasn't been talked about because the offense is so bad, the bullpen has been awful. You know, they've led major league the major leagues at one point in blown saves. They have the most losses in the league. And Jed had a chance to go out and spend, like the Reds spent, you know, small $3, $4, $8, $9 million to get some relievers, and their bullpen is solid. The Cubs, on the other hand, what did we do? We signed Kyle Hendricks for $16 million,
but that was an option. That was an option they picked up. I mean, the thing is, the margin was really thin, and losing Merriweather to injury, devastating. Alzolay being bad and now hurt, devastating. Losing Yency Almonte to injury, devastating. Those are three of what? Your top five righties that you were expecting, along with Neris and Mark Leiter Jr.
And then you like factor in Fulmer, who got hurt to start the year, so you had to sign those guys.
Yeah, I mean, but they could have gone out and done more, but they did have those three guys that they were expecting something from. The fact that there's nothing of consequence really to bring up underneath is troubling. Makes me question the pitch lab in terms of churning out minor league ready arms. Porter Hodge is a bomb waiting to happen. He's here and then he's gone. So the bullpen is a rough go. There's lots of them. I love the framework of this trade. I unfortunately have to report that David Haugh has been listening. So I'm worried if the pick six is a straight up gank of this segment, folks, you know who to blame. And that's the Odyssey app, which is a great way to listen, by the way. The Odyssey app is a wonderful way to listen. I mean, you could, if you'd like to listen to Mully and Haw tomorrow, Burnsy and Holmes, Parker the Spiegel, everything the Score has to offer, just grab that free Odyssey app, download it today, search 670 the Score, and take us wherever you may go, like on David Haw's run. Eno Saris is maybe my favorite guy to talk baseball with. I mean, other than Danny, I love talking to Eno Saris. We'll do it next. Eno from The Athletic joins us on the Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Here's a drive into the left field corner. Cubs take the lead. Bellinger will score. It's going to be a double for Dansby Swanson. He hammered one down the left field line, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
You know, Dansby Swanson has been an incredibly frustrating human at the plate this year. But as I was reading The Athletic and reading Eno Saris's piece about five struggling hitters who are doing the right things and getting the results, you know, you get a little sunshine. You get a little positivity as you read about Dansby. Then there he goes yesterday with the three hits. That seems like an excellent time to bring in Eno Saris on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Eno is a senior writer at The Athletic covering baseball analytics, but you've probably read him at Fangraphs, at ESPN, at Fox, and MLB.com, or maybe he's suggested 8 to 12 different craft beers that have been delicious in your life before. And we always enjoy getting a chance to talk to him on a Sunday morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Not so great.
I know, not feeling well? I apologize.
No. I've slept 24 of the last 36 hours.
Oh, my God. And then here I am forcing you to talk baseball.
I'm all right.
Say no. It's okay. but now it's too late. So we will drag wisdom from you. Wisdom and phlegm coming out of Eno Saris in equal amounts this morning. So why should we feel okay or still believe in the process of Dansby Swanson, who seems to be turning the ball over and pulling it on the ground a lot? But yesterday's three hits look good for your analysis, you know.
Yeah, I think an interesting thing that just came out was the bat tracking numbers. And we learned a lot about bat speed and swing length. But one thing we didn't get was last year's numbers. We didn't get context. And another thing we didn't get was contact point, which is really important because, you know, where you get the ball out in front has a lot to do with how fast your bat is going and so on and so forth, and where the ball goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've learned is that contact point is super important to players. And another way that they say it is timing, because contact point is, am I going to get this ball out in front and most likely pull it, and hit for power, or am I going to let this ball travel and hit it to the opposite field and not for as much power? And so there's that, you know, and by letting it travel, you may be more likely to make contact. So that's where there's a little bit of a tussle between power and strikeouts, power and contact ability. Hmm. And so when I look at Dansby Swanson, what I see is he's hit the ball as hard as he's ever hit it, you know, recently. So in terms of maximum exit velocity. So when you look at that, you say, okay, the bat speed is there. That's something that basically correlates exactly with bat speed. So you can say, okay, the bat speed's there. He's barreling the ball like he did last year and the year before. So when he gets it in the air, he's hitting it hard. The number that really sticks out that doesn't fit is his pull percentage. He's at like 52, 53%. He usually sits about 10 percentage points lower. So basically, and then I looked at where his ground ball, where his pull, his ground balls are coming from, and some of them are down the middle and on fastballs. And so what I'm basically saying is he's too far out in front. His timing is off where he's too aggressive. He's too far out in front. Now, I don't want him to go all the way to being an opposite field hitter because he doesn't have the power to hit home runs to the opposite field. He does need to be out in front to some extent. But just softening that, hitting some line drives to center, not hitting necessarily down the line. Now, I didn't see that double, but I heard that the highlight, was it straight down the line or was it to the power alley?
Which one was that? Because yesterday, Sean.
That was left center.
Left center. So power
that's
alley.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I mean, because if it's down the line, that's more and more likely that's going to be a ground ball. That's when you're topping the ball. That's too much pull. So if he can be left center to center, if he can soften his pull rate a little bit, I think that's what he needs to do.
So one of the reasons I love reading you, and always have and love talking to you is that you can translate the analytics very comfortably and very easy to some stuff that hitting coaches say. You're too out in front. Slow it down, and like it's whether it's quantifiable scouting or that kind of thing. Like this stuff doesn't have to be thought of as just like impossible to grasp. Here, I find myself thinking about Freddie Freeman, who says every time he's in batting practice, what he's trying to do is hit a line drive over the shortstop's head. You know, it's like so. There's a lefty sitting there. It's like, why don't more people think simply center of the diamond, center of the diamond, center of the diamond, or a tiny bit oppo, and just know that if they're out in front because of their own eagerness, that's going to be a good thing. Why don't people do that more often?
Well, I've always thought, like, the first time Freddie told me that a few years ago, I was like, you practice an out? You know, like, why would you practice an out? And especially when we had shifts, right? When we had shifts, there, like, if you practice a line drive of the middle, there's a dude standing there, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit less now, but there's still, you know, you can still get your shortstop basically behind, like, right up on the bag if you're a lefty. So I was a little surprised when he said that, but then I looked at the way that he hits the ball in batting practice and the way that he even just stands there during the game, and I realized that he's much more aggressive. He's much more leaned over. He's much more intense during the game. And so that changes, that makes you a little bit more pull happy. I think you're right. Like, I think this is something that, you know, hitters have told me is like, if I practice hitting line drives to right center, that sets me up for doing well in the game. And I think you're right. What happens then in the game is you're more aggressive. You're more eager. You're more likely to get the ball out front. So if you practice being patient, when you get into the game, your natural sort of aggression will take over, and you're not too aggressive where you're just pounding that ball into the ground to the pull side.
It reminds me of drummers I've played with, that are like,
oh, really?
Yeah, it totally does. Because, I mean, the best rhythm section I ever was in had a drummer who was aggressive and played a little fast, and the bass player pulled it back just a little bit. He sat in the groove. So this little confluence of, let me think the opposite field because I know my personal aggression is going to get in there. Like, compensating for that on the front end makes all the sense in the world to me.
I'm always like a baseline guy. Like, I love concerts. I always dance to the baseline. That's my heartbeat.
Dude, that's it.
So I love this idea, is like sort of practice to the baseline and play to the drums.
Exactly. And because the bass player is always inevitably the most chill dude in terms of his heartbeat.
I love that. He is.
So he's naturally pulling it back to where it needs to be.
Such characters, dude. I love bass players.
I'm right there with you. All right. So the Cubs have like this overall sense of mediocrity, which is jarring right now. And if we find ourselves thinking big picture about roster building, they haven't spent on the star. I thought your colleague Patrick Mooney wrote this really well today. Hoyer's front office has a methodical rebuild that prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle. I think that's a really good sentence, and it made sense theoretically, but in practice, do you need that 6 or 7 WAR dude who you know is going to raise, you know, the level of the water a bit?
That isn't actually what I've found. When I've looked into it, I found that like four above average young players is a core. Now, if you're buying in free agency, you're not really getting young players capital wise. So, that might be part of it. I kind of look a little bit more to player development and say, you know, it's on the Cubs. I think you could win by buying second-tier free agents. That's fine. You're supplementing what you're developing. So then it puts pressure on what you're developing. And you think about the Astros, right? They built that whole dynasty basically on players they developed and they supplemented without buying a star. And not all of the guys they've bought have worked out, but they haven't been on such long deals. Like the Jose Abreu deal did not work out, but it was a short one. So they're not going to be under that forever. So I think I'm just a big player development guy. And so I think you just need to develop your own guys. I think Morel is right at the doorstep. I know defensively he's got some issues, but you know, I think Steele is a big win for them internally.
I wonder if it's a matter of the mix, because they have some kids who they could bring up at corner outfield spots, but they're paying Happ and Suzuki at corner outfield spots, so they can't really bring up an influx that they might need. So
there is always a tension there. I think that's hurt the Yankees in terms of player development, because they've always had a veteran option that's being paid well, and you don't really want to let those guys go. I'm not here advocating for letting go Happ or Suzuki. And I think that they're probably better right now than the options. But you know, that calculus does change over time, and it is something to think about. But you know, where I look at the health of your player development system is often shown in the bullpen for me, because player development is often taking a player and making him just a half scouted grade better. And so I often find that the best player development systems have really good bullpens. They find guys, they make relievers. And, you know, the Cubs have had an uneven track record there, but if you just imagine Jeremiah Estrada in that bullpen right now, they'd probably be a little better off.
Oh man, that is so true. I asked Carter Hawkins directly about what happened with Jeremiah Estrada on our air about a week and a half ago. And he said, it's a good question. He paused. But he said that San Diego gave him a splitter. For those who don't know, Jeremiah Estrada, incredible four-seam fastball, has great carry or absence of drop or what are we calling it? Induced vertical break? Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah, that's what the kids are calling it.
Yeah, that's exactly what the kids are calling it. My nephew's 25, and that's what he calls it. So Estrada has that. Is that what San Diego did? Is they gave him a splitter to go with it?
Why didn't you try to?
Yeah, why didn't that?
I mean, and basically, you know, I've got a number of Stuff Plus that kind of wraps all that up, and you can find it on Fangraphs really easily.
Yeah.
Estrada had great Stuff Plus without the splitter, and he's not the kind of guy that I would have let go when I knew that depth in my bullpen was not necessarily a strength. I do think that the nice thing is that bullpen is one of the few places you can really improve at the trade deadline without giving up too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you put, you know, like a Tanner Scott in the Cubs bullpen, they get better. You know, there's if Jordan Wicks is who you think he is, they get better. If Seiya Suzuki, you know, is not hurt and plays a little better, then you get better. So they're a good team where you can identify the spots where they can improve. They won't cost them too much. I don't know if they're a great team, and I don't know if the prospects coming up are great. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. Maybe Cade Horton is great. That's going to be a big one for them.
Yes, it will. Eno Saris with us just for another couple minutes before we let him get back to more sleep. where's Garrett Crochet in terms of the ace conversation? He sure as hell looks like an ace to me. There's the stuff. There's the fact now that he's changing speeds on his stuff, and there's just the dominance. Last week it was Willie Adames saying that dude is an ace. This week it's Jaren Duran saying that guy's a stud. I mean, like, people are blown away by him right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's a excuse me. He's a 2.5 pitch pitcher. He doesn't, to righties, he's a lot of fastball cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And he has very few innings, which is very obvious. Everybody knows that he hasn't thrown a lot of innings. That makes him really complicated to acquire for this year, because you just don't know how long he's going to pitch this year before we have to shut him down. And I would offer that there's a little bit of a complication long-term, because as you've seen with Michael King this year, the first year of leaving the bullpen and going to starting, sometimes your velo is high because you're used to throwing that hard. And then when Michael King came to San Diego and was like, I'm going to be a starter all year, he immediately lost like 2 miles an hour on his fastball.
Hmm.
And probably on purpose, because he's like, I want to pitch all year. I want to pitch 180. So I'm not going to, you know, put my foot on the gas all year long. And so we don't know with Crochet, like, what does year two's fastball velocity look like?
Hmm.
And it's a little bit important for him because he throws like 97. It's and the point of inflection, it used to be if you throw 94 plus, when the average fastball was 92, if you threw 94 plus, then you saw a real increase in swing strikes and home runs went down. Now the league throws 94. So if you throw 96 or above, you start to see real, increases in swing strikes and so on. He's at 97. What if he drops to 96, 95 over the next few years? What if he only gives you 80, 100 innings a year because he's injured or whatever? That's the big question. Maybe it reduces the price for acquiring him, but it also means if I acquire him, am I going to have him in October, or do I have to shut him down now in order to have him in October? So there's a lot of questions around him. I'm going to be fascinated to see what he brings back and where he goes.
Last thing for you, Shota Imanaga has been existing with fastball and splitter predominantly. Less than 10% has been everything else, the sweeper, the change, and the curve. Has the league adjusted over these last two starts? Does he need to expand the mix perhaps as soon as today against Cincinnati?
I mean, I think he's throwing his two best pitches the most often, and the nice thing about his two pitches in particular is that they don't have big platoon splits. He has the kind of riding fastball and the splitter. Those are, you can throw those to lefties and righties. So that's the good news. The bad news is the other two pitches aren't that great. But what I have seen with two pitch pitchers is that, you know, people start to, what we've learned about the third time through the order is that it's about people getting used to the shapes of your pitches. Yeah. So you just have to throw these other things in certain counts where you can sneak it by, maybe get a called strike, maybe just throw them a different look. And it's not your best pitch. Maybe you throw it out of the strike zone. You're not trying to get you're just trying to show them something that's not your fastball and splitter, so that third time through the order, they're not like, oh, you know what? I got it. I've seen these two shapes. That's all he's got. I'm going to lock in on those. So I do think, even though they're not his best pitches, yeah, I think it'd probably be a good idea to start stealing some strikes with him, start to find a way to throw those a little earlier in the games so that later in the games, the fastball and splitter are still as effective as they can be.
All right. Well, I think we learned a lot. Number one, your wisdom to phlegm ratio was excellent in this in this interview. Extremely well done. And I'll be looking for the base player comp in the next hitting analysis that I read from Enos Saris.
Love it.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time. Sure.
Hey, thanks, guys.
You got it. That's one more cough on the way out from Eno Saris. We'll wrap things up in a moment here on 670 The Score. Zach Zeidman talked with a very important player about a possible new position. You'll hear that in a minute before we get out of here for Cubs and Reds on 670 The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Michael Busch drives one to deep center. It's got a chance. Gone. Michael Busch hit the first pitch in this third inning, a towering drive right over the fence at the 400-foot sign. The center fielder Perkins back. I kept waiting for him to jump, but the angle of the ball made him realize he had no chance, Ron, and it's a home run for Michael Busch. Cubs lead 1-0.
The Hall of Famer himself, Pat Hughes. Boy, he's good at his job. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. I was in the car yesterday for a good portion of the back half of that Cubs-Reds game, which meant I was in the comfortable hands of Pat and Ron and Zach Zeidman, and just so much emotion, context, hope, and otherwise is simply imbued in the delivery of Pat Hughes. Just remarkable. Those eighth inning rallies, the ninth inning rallies really took me on a journey. It's kind of nice when you're forced to hang out with the radio every once in a while. I mean, I choose it very often, but when you're forced, there's something else that's like, I don't know. It feels like a golden bonus opportunity, frankly. That could just be me, because I'm a junkie for the stuff. Zach Zeidman talked with Michael Busch. Was this yesterday on pregame?
I believe this is today, actually. Oh. We'll hear this later.
Oh, it's for today. Well, I don't want to steal the thunder.
It's just a little
on
snippet.
This. All right, it's just a little snippet because Michael Busch is in fact playing second base today. And Michael Busch has played a lot of second base in the minors. And he has not played much of it in the majors at all. But with Nico Hoerner injured, not on the injured list as of right now, but injured. Michael Busch was asked by Zach about playing second base, which he's doing today.
Yeah, it's a position I've played before. So, just an unfortunate circumstance with Nico. But, kind of taking ground balls here and there over the past couple months. So just trying to stay ready. And, yeah, it's a position I played before.
What is the toughest challenge when you're doing it for the first time in a season? Or is there one?
In a sense, I think the toughest part is just getting used to the positioning and the game speed over there, knowing how much time I have. I think that would probably be the toughest thing, or the thing that might take a couple innings to get used to.
Played 9 innings for the Dodgers in September of last year at second base, and in the minors played a ton of second base. So this is something he's done a lot and is a great opportunity here that you have to utilize the man as such. 1,000 innings at second base in AAA and AA, and that is going to be a very, very valuable thing to add to your roster flexibility. So here's the lineup as it stands for today for the Cubs against the righty Frankie Montas of the Reds. Tauchman in right field. Seiya Suzuki is playing and is DHing. That's a great sign. After a concern that it was oblique related and might linger for a few days, Seiya right back in the lineup in the two-hole at the DH. Cody Bellinger at first base. Chris Morel plays third and it's cleanup. Ian Happ in left. Dansby Swanson at shortstop, Michael Busch at second, Pete Crow Armstrong in center, and Miguel Amaya is your catcher. So that means there is a 3-man bench. And with Wisdom and Bodie and Yan Gomes, in addition to Nico, who we must assume is out again. So at least just 1 man down for Craig Counsell. Shota Imanaga You know, I'll be very interested to see if he expands the repertoire. You heard Eno there. I thought that was a good conversation. I wondered whether we'll see more sweepers or curves or changes from Shota. Eno believes that most guys just go with those two best pitches. And for Shota, it is fastball and split. And those obviously are vertical as opposed to horizontal, which the sweeper is more. So that can certainly be beneficial. But they need hitters, you know, by that third time around, you might need to have shown them some of the other stuff. So even if it's slightly different methodology, I do believe that we'll see a bit more of the mix as it stands today. The White Sox coming up against the Red Sox this afternoon. It is Chris Flexen, who pitched well against the Cubs before the rain delay, for the White Sox, going up against Zach Kelly. For the Red Sox, it's Corey Jolks, Nicky Lopez, Luis Robert Jr., Gavin Sheets, Andrew Vaughn, Paul DeYoung, Oscar Colas, Lenin Sosa, and Martin Maldonado. And his 0.74 batting average is the nine-hitter there. Been incredible fun today on Hit and Run. Want to thank Eno Saris from The Athletic. Just great stuff. If you missed Will Fleming, the Red Sox play-by-play voice from WEEI at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, use the Odyssey app and rewind and catch that. Highly recommend that conversation as well. The Royals are our team of the moment. Your phone calls and texts were awesome all day today. And we're hoping and assuming that no one heard the Luis Robert for Pete Crow Armstrong trade conversation, so it can be brought to you with further context, opinions, and sound tomorrow afternoon on Parkins and Spiegel. If indeed it does show up as part of the Pick 6 tomorrow morning, it is your duty, Hit and Run listener, to immediately text that show and accuse David Haw of ganking a Pick 6 question direct from my hot, grubby hands here on Hit and Run. Thanks to Sean Sears for doing a great job, as he always does. Enjoy Cubs baseball coming up next. This has been Matt Spiegel. Be back with you tomorrow afternoon right here on 670 The Score.
Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the ride. We're going to get there.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Here's a high fly ball deep left center. It's got a chance. Get out the tape measure. Long gone for Seiya Suzuki. Into the upper deck and left. He got all of that one. Similar in distance, I would think, to his grand slam last Saturday night against the same pitcher, Hunter Green.
Seiya Suzuki with a homer the other night. He and Morel both homered in the 8-4 loss. Which Cubs loss was your favorite? Oh boy, it's grim. The fourth place Chicago Cubs, now passed by the Reds, in addition to the Cardinals and, of course, the Milwaukee Brewers. Lot of work to do. Lot of work to do for the 2024 Chicago Cubs. It has been a tough season so far for the vision of Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins. It has been a tough year so far. I thought Patrick Mooney said it very well today in The Athletic. that Nico Horner and Seiya Suzuki, who of course are both injured, both part of a short Cubs bench, just two people on the bench yesterday as they lost that one. Hoyer's front office, he said that Horner and Suzuki should be in the prime of their careers. Jed Hoyer's front office factored that into a methodical rebuild that prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle. And I think that's very well said. And there is good reasoning as to why they prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle, trying to build it with a bunch of pretty good players. But when a bunch of those pretty good players do not have pretty good years, then you're in a lot of trouble. And there is no superstar to put up, what, a 6-war season, a 7-war season? There's nobody to do that. There is nobody on this team to do that.
For context, 2016 had 4 6-war players.
Wow.
Six-war players.
That's a great pull, Sean. That's a great pull by Sean Sears. 4 different 6-war players. Yeah, that'll help. There's nobody on this roster who's looking like it. I mean, Dansby Swanson has had 5 WAR, wins above replacement, seasons before, but he's obviously nowhere near that right now. Seiya Suzuki is the guy they thought was going to be a superstar. He's the guy they needed to be a superstar. It's a investment of more than $100 million when you factor in the posting fee. He has not delivered as such. The mix is not working because the prospects that they could be bringing up aggressively are corner outfield types. I mean, it'd be great to have Alexander Canario in this lineup, but he's got nowhere to play. It'd be intriguing to bring up Owen Casey in this lineup, but he doesn't really have anywhere to play. They've paid Hap and paid Seiya at corner outfield spots, which is where they have the prospects who are most ready-made. Then they make the trade for Michael Busch because they think he's better than Matt Mervis. And is he? He had a great 6-game stretch in April, and it's gone way down, and then it's perhaps come back up a little bit, but I don't know. And I don't want to hammer Seiya too much, but the problem is he's the one who they expected to be a superstar. He's the one that they thought was going to be that dude. And he clearly gets in his head too much. And it's a difficult thing to scout. And maybe it didn't happen in Japan and it's happening at this level. But we've seen it in the field, as we've talked about, frankly, on the 2 previous Sundays. And it happens at the plate, which we talked about a lot last year, that he got caught in between. And still sometimes he does get caught in between. Dustin Kelly, the hitting coach, in that same Patrick Mooney article today. With Seiya, it's just like, hey, your swing is so good that when the ball's in the middle of the zone and you're on time, great things are going to happen. We just have to try to limit some of those thoughts about getting outside that really basic, simple approach. Look, hitting is hard. But when he struggles, he's got one swing that's another way. He's got another swing that's another way. And he gets caught in which swing to have. You see a lot of bad, weird swings sometimes from, say, a lot of swords, as Pitching Ninja says it. He's too good for that. And his own hitting coaches know it. So look, Seiya's OPS is back up near 800. So he's above league average. But he's expected to be that 900 OPS superstar that he was from August until the end of the year. And he hit the spring running, but has not been that guy with the oblique injury and now hurt again. And you hope it's not related to the oblique again. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to you, Eno Saris, in about 20 minutes or so on Hit and Run on the Score. This is John in Logan Square. John, you're on Hit and Run. Good morning to you on a Sunday.
Hey, Matt. How you doing, man?
I'm good. It's a beautiful day. I've decided it's going to be a great day. I'm going to live in baseball optimism, but then I start talking and it gets in trouble. Can you help me?
I know.
Can you help me?
I was at the Red Stars game yesterday. I didn't check the Cubs score because I already knew that they lost.
Oh, man. That's rough.
So a couple of things. The 2016 team, you mentioned WAR. I think this team can have 4 or 5, 6 players above 4 or 5 WAR if you don't factor in their defense. I think that's what's killing their WAR this year. Is when you measure the 2016 Cubs, their defensive WAR added probably a game or two to that. One. Two, If you think about last year, we lost the season in about 10 games, 2 weeks' time. So that leads me to some optimism that we can make up that time in the same amount of weeks or days or games, right? I think a 2-3 week stretch is all it takes to get back in it. Three, I have a trade. If you were the White Sox, would you trade Robert for PCA and a Wesneski and or a Brown or an Assad or a Horton? What do you think?
That's an interesting deal. I don't think I've heard that yet. That's the kind of trade proposal, at least a framework, that ought to light up the phone lines here at 670 The Score. I find myself in the position of hoping that no one has mentioned it before and that no one mentions it tomorrow. David Haw, if you're listening, don't talk about that tomorrow. Lawrence Bernsey, if you're listening, don't talk about that tomorrow. I know Danny's not listening, so that's good. I got that covered. I can bring it to the pre-show meeting. The Robert trade with PCA as a centerpiece. Don't give up Brown. See if you can convince him on Wesneski. PCA and Wesneski for Luis Robert. I know Cub fans, you love your PCA.
This would break me.
Would break you as a PCA fan, as a Cub fan? I know it's your guy.
I'm a little bit of both. We'll talk about Sayas, my other guy, too. Uh-huh. This team, there's not too many guys that are fun to cheer for.
Right I now. Know, but you've put Robert in center field right now on this team.
He'd look pretty damn good, man. He would get hurt, probably.
Of course he would. He's going to get hurt four times in the next year and a half.
63 games, man. Oh, boy. Oh. Think of him pulling balls at right field.
We saw it the other night. Field. That home run that they said was, what, 448? Hogwash.
The windows behind Wrigley were concerned when he hit that, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, oh my God. Absolute blast. Interesting. It's a good call there, John, because it would hurt to give up PCA.
It usually tells you it's a good trade, though, right?
Absolutely. If it would hurt a little bit and it's confounding a little bit. Here's what we know. We know that Jed Hoyer and Chris Getz could make that deal either at the pickup line at school or perhaps the Whole Foods or in each other's backyard. Or via text today, after hearing the segment. It seems some people are listening to the show. Folks, just about 4 minutes after we talked about John Schriffen's homage to Hawk Harrelson, which I thought was well executed, and apparently he got clearance from Hawk to do it, but I wondered why it happened on sort of a random Paul DeJong home run when you're already up 5-1, and that makes it 6-1. Just a few minutes after we were talking about it, wondering why it happened, John Schriffen tweeted that it was his homage to Hawk on the anniversary of Hawk Harrelson night. Was that last year was Hawk night or the 2 year anniversary? I don't know.
I tried to Google this. I have not been able to find much.
Yeah. I don't know many Sox fans who are like, boy, calendars come around once again to that very special day, the anniversary of Hawk Harrelson night. But there you go. So that's why I did it. All right. Whatever gets you going. Thought it was indeed well executed. I got no problem with it. This is Perry in Tennessee on 670 The Score. Good morning, Perry. Welcome to the show.
Matt, good morning. Hey, I want to talk about the coach training for Robert as well. But here's the thing. The point I want to make is right now with an inexperienced Chris Getz, I don't know that you are only going to get PCA and another piece. You might need a little more than that to get Louis Roberts. But the important fact with the Cubs is what you have to do is first – Suzuki's got to be when he's good, he's great, but he can't be as bad as he is. Has to be average. But with the trades, they need to get two pieces. I feel they got to be guys like a Louis Robert that are in their early prime. You don't want to spend money on guys 30, 32, 33 that won't be here with the core. So I like the idea that Cubs have so many prospects to give up that you don't know who's going to be good, who's not going to be good. I think the stocks at this point in time are easy to be had. They don't want to pay for a Crochet. We both know. I don't like giving up great pitchers. But in 2 years, they're not paying for the guy. They're just not going to do it. So, and Reinsdorf has no intention of making that team great. He's hoping to just light in a bottle and get a bunch of young guys that somehow gel and are competitive. But he is in no way is he paying a big contract for a guy like Robert or for a guy like Crochet.
All right, let's expand it. Let's go. Let's do it, okay? Let's roll. Let's get kooky. Robert and Crochet. Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert. Right the hell now. To the Cubs, what would it take? Pete Crow Armstrong and Ben Brown. Give them a young pitcher. I mean, you're going to have to.
Right.
You're getting Crochet. Make them give you a bullpen arm, you know? Because make them give you John Brebbia. Or if you really want Kopech, I don't want Kopech because I don't trust Kopech. I'm probably not going to do that. But if you're going to give them, because give them James Triantos, you know, and then give them either, oh, it hurts to say Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, but you've got corner outfielders locked and loaded and getting paid in Happ and Saya. So Canario, I mean, you'll offer them Canario and Brennan Davis.
I was going to say Brennan Davis.
Of course.
Is the other guy, right?
Kevin Alcantara. Kevin Alcantara. So you're going to get Robert for center field when you've got Bellinger under contract for center field. But
I mean, the White Sox need outfielders, right? We know that.
Yeah, they do. So you'll give them a couple outfielders. Give them Alcantara and Brennan Davis. All right, how's this for a trade? Alcantara, Brennan Davis, Ben Brown, and PCA. I know it hurts.
That's a good trade.
But it's Luis Robert and Garrett Crochet.
It almost feels light, right?
It is light.
Yeah.
It is light. You'll have to give him another. Give him a 5-for-2.
Michael Arias, maybe throw him another.
No. You'll need Arias for the bullpen right now this year.
We're not getting rid of him.
No. Especially if you're trading Ben Brown. You're going to need him.
That's true.
And because you put Wicks in the rotation, but you're going to need a piece. All right. We're just spitballing this on the fly, okay? But these are exciting and desperate times. Whew, that's a lot, man. Triantos, Brennan Davis, Kevin Alcantara, Ben Brown, and PCA? Ah! That's too much.
Do the Cubs get better is the question.
Of course they do.
I mean, they get better with Crochet, right?
They get an ace. They get a flat-out ace to go with Steele and Shota all of a sudden. Yeah, I mean, you're probably going to... You'll DFA Hendricks once he hits the service time. Sad to say. And you'll bring up Michael Arias in your bullpen with no Ben Brown. You'll do things like that. All right, you want to tweak it a little bit? Goodness. For those who missed the first hour of the show, I'm on a yes, I would trade Luis Robert if I were the White Sox. No, I would not trade Garrett Crochet if I were the White Sox. But suddenly, in this segment, I became the Cubs. And that's when things got interesting. We take you now live to the backyard in Winnetka, where Chris Getz and Jed Hoyer have a cigar and a bourbon by the fire pit this evening and strike a deal that blows the minds of multiple baseball fanatics in our unique two-team town. One of them could be Stan from Bellwood. Hello, Stan. Welcome in.
Hey, Steve. I'm enjoying this. Your callers are giving me a lot to chew on here.
Uh-huh.
I want to contribute a little bit. Circling back to that possible Crochet and Robert trade. But just to piggyback on what you were talking about prior to that, you will be interested to know, Speaks, that I am done with trying to figure out who your team of the moment is from week to week. because I'm glad I'm not actually betting money on this, because there was no doubt in my mind that Cincinnati was your team of the moment for this week. I mean, they started out the week in last place.
Yeah.
They've leapfrogged three teams.
Uh-huh.
They've won 7 in a row and 8 out of 10.
Yeah, that's true.
So they've actually made a bigger impact on the standings than Kansas. I mean, Kansas City's been good, but they're running in place. I mean, they're not gaining any ground on the team that's ahead of them. I was absolutely dead certain that it was going to be Cincinnati.
Okay.
So I'm just going to wait until you disclose who it is going forward. I'm not even going to.
I don't know. First of all, you're the best team of the moment critic that I've ever had, Stan. I mean,
I'm not a critic. I just good at following your logic.
Oh, no, I understand. And, you know, but it's, I think we're going to have to throw it open now. Now that we've done as many teams as we have, I needed to get the Royals in. I hadn't done them yet, Stan. So it's sort of like the Royals winning this week's team of the moment is kind of like Carl Malone eventually getting an MVP after they were tired of voting for Jordan. Yeah.
I got you. Hey. Okay, back to the White Sox.
Yes, please.
I don't want to trade either Crochet or Robert. My thinking is You build around those guys. But the 8,000-pound elephant in the room that renders this entire conversation moot is the fact that the White Sox are not going to spend for elite players that would get them out of this rut. So consequently, they don't really have any choice. They've got to trade at least one of those guys, and more likely both. The White Sox are 10 times worse this year than they were last year. And during the offseason, Getz brought in, Nicky Lopez and Maldonado and DeYoung, mm-hmm. and considered that an upgrade because he hated last year's team. And they're probably going to be the worst team ever this year. I think they're on pace now for like 41 wins because they've won, a few games over the last couple of days, but they don't have any choice.
Yeah.
That's the only other option that's open to them if they're serious about getting better. So,
I think it is. I think it is. And maybe it's always been in the mind of Chris Getz. And if he does have the freedom to do that, it's seemingly, increasingly likely that that's the way it's going to go. I mean, look, Han dealt Sale and Quintana, and those were very good trades in terms of what they got. No matter how it ended up working out at the tail end of like having to give up on Dylan Cease and trade him away, and Eloy being hurt as much as he was, and Kopech not fully panning out either as starter or reliever, and Moncada being great and then apathetic and then hurt, There was a lot there that made sense in those deals. And the Adam Eaton deal, maybe the best of all of them, right? With Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez. I mean, it's amazing. And then here we are. It's such a weird time to look around the leaderboard and see Ronaldo Lopez there, Chris Sale there, and all these guys. Giolito in town, Liam Hendricks in town with the Red Sox. There's a ton of strangeness going on with that Sox mix and what was and where they are now. John is in Minnesota and is now on 670 The Score. What's up, John?
Spiggs, I love the thought of the Robert trade, although I don't see Jed in any way. He hasn't shown that, he's going to step out on a limb like that. And I think, you asked who's the Cub that's most underperformed. I think it's Hoyer. I mean, you've got a guy that's the only major market GM in this division, and he's gotten pantsed by the Brewers. I think watching the Reds here the last couple series, their roster's better. And I think especially, that thing that hasn't been talked about because the offense is so bad, the bullpen has been awful. They've led the major leagues at one point in blown saves. They have the most losses in the league. And Jed had a chance to go out and spend, like the Reds spent, small $3, $4, $8, $9 million to get some relievers, and their bullpen is solid. The Cubs, on the other hand, what did we do? We signed Kyle Hendricks for $16 million,
but that was an option. That was an option they picked up. I mean, the thing is, the margin was really thin, and losing Merriweather to injury, devastating. Alzolay being bad and now hurt, devastating. Losing Yency Almonte to injury, devastating. Those are three of your top five righties that you were expecting, along with Neris and Mark Leiter Jr.
And then you factor in Fulmer, who got hurt to start the year, so you had to sign those guys.
Yeah, I mean, but they could have gone out and done more, but they did have those three guys that they were expecting something from. The fact that there's nothing of consequence really to bring up underneath is troubling. Makes me question the pitch lab in terms of churning out minor league ready arms. Porter Hodge is a bomb waiting to happen. He's here and then he's gone. So the bullpen is a rough go. There's lots of them. I love the framework of this trade. I unfortunately have to report that David Haw has been listening, so I'm worried. If the pick six is a straight-up gank of this segment, folks, you know who to blame. And that's the Odyssey app, which is a great way to listen, by the way. The Odyssey app is a wonderful way to listen. I mean, you could, if you'd like to listen to Mully and Haw tomorrow, Burnsy and Holmes, Parker the Spiegel, everything the Score has to offer, just grab that free Odyssey app. Download it today. Search 670 The Score and take us wherever you may go, like on David Haw's run. Eno Saris is maybe my favorite guy to talk baseball with. I mean, other than Danny, I love talking to Eno Saris. We'll do it next. Eno from The Athletic joins us on The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Here's a drive into the left field corner. Cubs take the lead. Bellinger will score. It's going to be a double for Dansby Swanson. He hammered one down the left field line, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
You know, Dansby Swanson has been an incredibly frustrating human at the plate this year. But as I was reading The Athletic and reading Eno Saris's piece about five struggling hitters who are doing the right things and getting the results, you know, you get a little sunshine. You get a little positivity as you read about Dansby. Then there he goes yesterday with the three hits. That seems like an excellent time to bring in Eno Saris on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Eno is a senior writer at The Athletic covering baseball analytics, but you've probably read him at Fangraphs, at ESPN, at Fox, and MLB.com, or maybe he's suggested 8 to 12 different craft beers that have been delicious in your life before. And we always enjoy getting a chance to talk to him on a Sunday morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Not so great.
I know, not feeling well? I apologize. Yeah. This is...
I've slept 24 of the last 36 hours.
Oh, my God. And then here I am forcing you to talk baseball.
Say no.
It's okay. But now it's too late. So we will drag wisdom from you. Wisdom and phlegm coming out of Eno Saris in equal amounts this morning. So why should we feel okay or still believe in the process of Dansby Swanson, who seems to be turning the ball over and pulling it on the ground a lot? But yesterday's three hits look good for your analysis, you know.
Yeah, I think an interesting thing that just came out was the bat tracking numbers. And we learned a lot about bat speed and swing length. But one thing we didn't get was last year's numbers. We didn't get context. And another thing we didn't get was contact point, which is really important because, you know, where you get the ball out in front has a lot to do with how fast your bat is going and so on and so forth, and where the ball goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've learned is that contact point is super important to players. And another way that they say it is timing, because contact point is, am I going to get this ball out in front and most likely pull it and hit for power, or am I going to let this ball travel and hit it to the opposite field and not for as much power? And so there's that, you know, and by letting it travel, you may be more likely to make contact. So that's where there's a little bit of a tussle between power and strikeouts, power and contact ability. And so when I look at Dansby Swanson, what I see is, he's hit the ball as hard as he's ever hit it, you know, recently. So in terms of maximum exit velocity. So when you look at that, you say, okay, the bat speed is there. That's something that basically correlates exactly with bat speed. So you can say, okay, the bat speed's there. He's barreling the ball like he did last year and the year before. So when he gets it in the air, he's hitting it hard. The number that really sticks out that doesn't fit is his pull percentage. He's at like 52, 53%. He usually sits about 10 percentage points lower. So basically, and then I looked at where his ground ball, where his ground balls are coming from, and some of them are down the middle and on fastballs. And so what I'm basically saying is he's too far out in front. His timing is off where he's too aggressive. He's too far out in front. Now, I don't want him to go all the way to being an opposite field hitter, because he doesn't have the power to hit home runs to the opposite field. He does need to be out in front to some extent. But just softening that, hitting some line drives to center, not hitting necessarily down the line. Now, I didn't see that double, but I heard that the highlight. Was it straight down the line or was it to the power alley?
Which one was that? Because yesterday, Sean.
That was left center.
Left center. So power alley.
That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, you know, because if it's down the line, that's more and more likely that's going to be a ground ball. That's when you're topping the ball. That's too much pull. So If he can be left center to center, if he can soften his pull rate a little bit, I think that's what he needs to do.
So one of the reasons I love reading you, you know, and always have and love talking to you is that you can translate the analytics very comfortably and very easy to some stuff that hitting coaches say. You know, you're two out in front, slow it down. And like, it's whether it's quantifiable scouting or that kind of thing, like this stuff doesn't have to be thought of as just like impossible to grasp here. I find myself thinking about Freddie Freeman, who says every time he's in batting practice, what he's trying to do is hit a line drive over the shortstop's head. You know, it's like, so there's a lefty sitting there. It's like, why don't more people think simply center of the diamond, center of the diamond, center of the diamond, or a tiny bit oppo, and just know that if they're out in front because of their own eagerness, that that's going to be a good thing. Why don't people do that more often?
Well, I've always thought, like, the first time Freddie told me that a few years ago, I was like, you practice an out? You know, like, why would you practice an out? And especially when we had shifts, right? When we had shifts, there, like, if you practice a line drive of the middle, there's a dude standing there, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit less now, but there's still, you know, you can still get your shortstop basically behind, like, right up on the bag if you're a lefty. So I was a little surprised when he said that, but then I looked at the way that he hits the ball in batting practice and the way that he even just stands there during the game, and I realized that he's much more aggressive. He's much more leaned over. He's much more intense during the game. And so that changes, that makes you a little bit more pull happy. I think you're right. Like, I think this is something that, you know, hitters have told me is like, if I practice hitting line drives to right center, that sets me up for doing well in the game. And I think you're right. What happens then in the game is you're more aggressive. You're more eager. You're more likely to get the ball out front. So if you practice being patient, when you get into the game, your natural sort of aggression will take over, and you're not too aggressive where you're just pounding that ball into the ground to the pull side.
It reminds me of drummers I've played with, you know, that are like,
oh, really?
Yeah, it totally does. Because, I mean, the best rhythm section I ever was in had a drummer who was aggressive and played a little fast, and the bass player pulled it back just a little bit. He sat in the groove. So this little confluence of, let me think the opposite field because I know my personal aggression is going to get in there. Like, compensating for that on the front end makes all the sense in the world to me.
I'm always like a baseline guy. Like, I love concerts. I always dance to the baseline. That's my heartbeat.
Dude, that's it.
So I love this idea, is like, sort of practice to the bass line and play to the drums.
exactly. And because the bass player is always inevitably the most chill dude in terms of his heartbeat.
I love that.
Yes.
I love
he is. So he's naturally pulling it back to where it needs to be.
Such characters, dude. I love bass players.
Yeah, I'm right there okay. with you. All right, so the Cubs have like this overall sense of mediocrity, which is jarring right now. And if we find ourselves thinking big picture about roster building, they haven't spent on the star. I thought your colleague Patrick Mooney wrote this really well today. Hoyer's front office has a methodical rebuild that prioritized well-rounded players over stars, flexible contracts over mega deals, and patience over sizzle. I think that's a really good sentence, and it made sense theoretically, but in practice, do you need that 6 or 7 WAR dude who you know is going to raise, you know, the level of the water a bit?
That isn't actually what I've found. When I've looked into it, I've found that like four above average young players is a core. Now, if you're buying in free agency, you're not really getting young players capital Y. So, that might be part of it. I kind of look a little bit more to player development and say, you know, it's on the Cubs. I think you could win by buying second tier free agents. That's fine. You're supplementing what you're developing. So then it puts pressure on what you're developing. And if you think about the Astros, right? They've built that whole dynasty basically on players they developed, and they supplemented without buying a star. And not all of the guys they've bought have worked out, but they haven't been on such long deals. Like the Jose Abreu deal did not work out, but it was a short one. So they're not going to be under that forever. So I think I'm just a big player development guy, and so I think you just need to develop your own guys. I think Morrell is right at the doorstep. I know defensively he's got some issues, but you know, I think Steele is a big win for them internally.
I wonder then, you know, sorry to interrupt, but I wonder if it's a matter of the mix, because they have some kids who they could bring up at corner outfield spots, but they're paying Happ and Suzuki at corner outfield spots, so they can't really bring up an influx that they might need. So
there is always a tension there. I think that's hurt the Yankees in terms of player development, because they've always had a veteran option that's being paid well, and you don't really want to let those guys go.
Mm.
I'm not here advocating for letting go Happ or Suzuki. And I think that they're probably better right now than the options. But you know, that calculus does change over time, and it is something to think about. But you know, where I look at the health of your player development system is often shown in the bullpen for me, because player development is often taking a player and making him just a half scouted grade better. And so I often find that the best player development systems have really good bullpens. They find guys, they make relievers. And, you know, the Cubs have had an uneven track record there, but if you just imagine Jeremiah Estrada in that bullpen right now, they'd probably be a little better off.
Oh man, that is so true. I asked Carter Hawkins directly about what happened with Jeremiah Estrada on our air about a week and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
And he said, it's a good question. He paused. He said that San Diego gave him a splitter. For those who don't know, Jeremiah Estrada, incredible four-seam fastball. It has great carry or absence of drop what are we calling it? Induced vertical break? Is that what we're calling it now?
Yeah, that's what the kids are calling it.
That's exactly what the kids are calling it. My nephew's 25, and that's what he calls it. So Estrada has that. Is that what San Diego did? Is they gave him a splitter to go with it?
Why didn't you try that?
Yeah, why didn't that?
I mean, and basically, you know, I've got a number of Stuff Plus that kind of wraps all that up, and you can find it on Fangraphs really easily.
Yeah.
Estrada had great Stuff Plus without the splitter, and he's not the kind of guy that I would have let go when I knew that depth in my bullpen was not necessarily a strength. I do think that the nice thing is that bullpen is one of the few places you can really improve at the trade deadline without giving up too much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you put, you know, like a Tanner Scott in the Cubs bullpen, they get better. If Jordan Wicks is who you think he is, they get better. If Seiya Suzuki, is not hurt and plays a little better, then you get better. So they're a good team where you can identify the spots where they can improve. They won't cost them too much. I don't know if they're a great team, and I don't know if the prospects coming up are great. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. Maybe Cade Horton is great. That's going to be a big one for them.
Yes, it will. Saras with us just for another couple minutes before we let him get back to more sleep. where's Garrett Crochet in terms of the ace conversation? He sure as hell looks like an ace to me. There's the stuff. There's the fact now that he's changing speeds on his stuff. And there's just the dominance. Last week, it was Willy Adames saying that dude is an ace. This week, it's Jaron Duran saying that guy's a stud. I mean, like, people are blown away by him right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's a excuse me. He's a 2.5 pitch pitcher. He doesn't to righties. He's a lot of fastball cutter,
mm-hmm.
And he has very few innings, which is very obvious. Everybody knows that he hasn't thrown a lot of innings. That makes him really complicated to acquire for this year, because you just don't know how long he's going to pitch this year before we have to shut him down. And I would offer that there's a little bit of a complication long term, because as you've seen with Michael King this year, the first year of leaving the bullpen and going to starting, sometimes your velo is high because you're used to throwing that hard. And then when Michael King came to San Diego and was like, I'm going to be a starter all year, he immediately lost like 2 miles an hour on his fastball.
Hmm.
and probably on purpose, because he's like, I want to pitch all year. I want to pitch 180. So I'm not going to, you know, put my foot on the gas all year long. And so we don't know with Crochet, like, what does year two's fastball velocity look like? And it's a little bit important for him because he throws like 97. It's and the point of inflection, it used to be if you throw 94 plus, when the average fastball is 92, if you threw 94 plus, then you saw a real increase in swing strikes and home runs went down. Now the league throws 94. So if you throw 96 or above, you start to see real, you know, increases in swing strikes and so on. He's at 97. What if he drops to 96, 95 over the next few years? What if he only gives you 80, 100 innings a year because he's injured or whatever? That's the big question. Maybe it reduces the price for acquiring him, but it also means if I acquire him, am I going to have him in October, or do I have to shut him down now in order to have him in October? So there's a lot of questions around him. I'm going to be fascinated to see what he brings back and where he goes.
Last thing for you, Eno. Shota Imanaga has been existing with fastball and splitter predominantly. Less than 10% has been everything else, the sweeper, the change, and the curve. Has the league adjusted over these last two starts? Does he need to expand the mix perhaps as soon as today against Cincinnati?
I mean, I think he's throwing his two best pitches the most often, and the nice thing about his two pitches in particular is that they don't have big platoon splits. He has the kind of riding fastball and the splitter. Those are, you can throw those to lefties and righties. So that's the good news. The bad news is the other two pitches aren't that great. But what I have seen with two pitch pitchers is that, you know, people start to, what we've learned about the third time through the order is that it's about people getting used to you, the shapes of your pitches. So you just have to throw these other things in certain counts where you can sneak it by, maybe get a called strike, maybe just throw them a different look. And it's not your best pitch. Maybe you throw it out of the strike zone. You're not trying to get a, you're just trying to show them something that's not your fastball and splitter, so that third time through the order, they're not like, oh, you know what? I got it. I've seen these two shapes. That's all he's got. I'm going to lock in on those. So I do think, even though they're not his best pitches, yeah, I think it'd probably be a good idea to start stealing some strikes with them, start to find a way to throw those a little earlier in the games, so that later in the games, the fastball and splitter are still as effective as they can be.
All right. Well, I think we learned a lot. Number one, your wisdom to phlegm ratio was excellent in this in this interview. Extremely well done. And I'll be looking for the bass player comp in the next hitting analysis that I read from Eno Saris.
Love it.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks, guys.
You got it. That's one more cough on the way out from Eno Saris. We'll wrap things up in a moment here on 670 The Score. Zach Zaidman talked with a very important player about a possible new position. You'll hear that in a minute before we get out of here for Cubs and Reds on 670 The Score.
The premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
Michael Busch drives one to deep center. It's got a chance. Gone. Michael Busch hit the first pitch in this third inning, a towering drive right over the fence at the 400-foot sign. The center fielder Perkins back. I kept waiting for him to jump, but the angle of the ball made him realize he had no chance, Ron, and it's a home run for Michael Busch. Cubs lead 1-0.
The Hall of Famer himself, Pat Hughes. Boy, he's good at his job. It's Matt Spiegel here with you on Hit and Run. I was in the car yesterday for a good portion of the back half of that Cubs-Reds game, which meant I was in the comfortable hands of Pat and Ron and Zach Zaidman, and just so much emotion, context, hope, and otherwise is simply imbued in the delivery of Pat Hughes. Just remarkable. Those eighth inning rallies, the ninth inning rallies really took me on a journey. It's kind of nice when you're forced to hang out with the radio every once in a while. I mean, I choose it very often, but when you're forced, there's something else that's like, I don't know. It feels like a golden bonus opportunity, frankly. That could just be me, because I'm a junkie for the stuff. Zach Zaidman talked with Michael Bush. Was this yesterday on pregame?
I believe this is today, actually. Oh. We'll hear this later.
Oh, it's for today. Well, I don't want to steal the thunder.
It's just a little
on
snippet.
This. All right, it's just a little snippet because Michael Bush is in fact playing second base today. And Michael Bush it has played a lot of second base in the minors. And he has not played much of it in the majors at all. But with Nico Horner injured, not on the injured list as of right now, but injured. Michael Bush was asked by Zach about playing second base, which he's doing today.
Yeah, it's a position I've played before. Just an unfortunate circumstance with Nico. Kind of just, taking ground balls here and there over the past couple months. So just trying to stay ready. And yeah, it's a position I played before.
What is the toughest challenge when you're doing it for the first time in a season? Or is there one?
In a sense, I think the toughest part is just getting used to the positioning and the game speed over there, knowing how much time I have. I think that would probably be the toughest thing, or the thing that might take a couple innings to get used to.
Played 9 innings for the Dodgers in September of last year at second base, and in the minors played a ton of second base. So this is something he's done a lot and is a great opportunity here that you have to utilize the man as such. 1,000 innings at second base in AAA and AA, and that is going to be a very, very valuable thing to add to your roster flexibility. So here's the lineup as it stands for today for the Cubs against the righty Frankie Montas of the Reds. Tauchman in right field. Seiya Suzuki is playing and is DHing. That's a great sign. After concern that it was oblique related and might linger for a few days, Seiya right back in the lineup in the two-hole at the DH. Cody Bellinger at first base. Chris Morel plays third and it's cleanup. Ian Happ in left. Dansby Swanson at shortstop, Michael Bush at second, Pete Crow Armstrong in center, and Miguel Amaya is your catcher. So that means there is a 3-man bench. And with Wisdom and Bodie and Yan Gomes, in addition to Nico, who we must assume is out again. So at least just 1 man down for Craig Counsell. Shota Imanaga. I'll be very interested to see if he expands the repertoire. You heard Eno there. I thought that was a good conversation. I wondered whether we'll see more sweepers or curves or changes from Shota. Eno believes that most guys just go with those two best pitches. And for Shota, it is fastball and split. And those obviously are vertical as opposed to horizontal, which the sweeper is more. So that can certainly be beneficial. But they need hitters, by that third time around, you might need to have shown them some of the other stuff. So even if it's slightly different methodology, I do believe that we'll see a bit more of the mix as it stands today. The White Sox coming up against the Red Sox this afternoon. It is Chris Flexen, who pitched well against the Cubs before the rain delay, for the White Sox, going up against Zach Kelly. For the Red Sox, it's Corey Jolks, Nicky Lopez, Luis Robert Jr., Gavin Sheets, Andrew Vaughn, Paul DeYoung, Oscar Colas, Lenin Sosa, and Martin Maldonado. And his .074 batting average is the 9-hitter there. Been incredible fun today on Hit and Run. Want to thank Eno Saris from The Athletic. Just great stuff. If you missed Will Fleming, the Red Sox play-by-play voice from WEEI at the top of the 10 o'clock hour, use the Odyssey app and rewind and catch that. Highly recommend that conversation as well. The Royals are our team of the moment. Your phone calls and texts were awesome all day today. And we're hoping and assuming that no one heard the Luis Robert for Pete Crow Armstrong trade conversation, so it can be brought to you with further context, opinions, and sound tomorrow afternoon on Parkins and Spiegel. If indeed it does show up as part of the Pick 6 tomorrow morning, it is your duty, Hit and Run listener, to immediately text that show and accuse David Haw of ganking a Pick 6 question direct from my hot, grubby hands here on Hit and Run. Thanks to Sean Sears for doing a great job, as he always does. Enjoy Cubs baseball coming up next. This has been Matt Spiegel. Be back with you tomorrow afternoon right here on 670 The Score.
Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the ride. We're going to get there.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or track pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.